really care about it, mm-hmm. which is sort of odd. So anyway.
All right. Thanks for that, Peter. The film is...
A Harvest of Shame.
And you can find it on YouTube.
Very easily. It's on YouTube, but go to Google, put Harvest of Shame. Put 1960, I guess.
Yeah.
But do it for YouTube or Google, and you'll get the documentary quite easily.
Great. We will be back in just a few minutes with Gardening... we'll be back in a few minutes or a few moments with Bird Note, and then we'll be talking gardens with Gardening with Embark.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more. Right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
This is Bird Note. When a perched male ruby-throated hummingbird raises its head toward the sun at just the right angle, its throat glitters like a crimson spotlight. When it turns its head slightly, the bird's throat no longer gleams. It appears colorless, dark. A hummingbird's brilliant throat feathers are called its gorget. The term comes from days of old, when a knight in armor wore a metallic collar, or gorget, to protect his throat. The hummingbird's intense glint is the result of iridescence rather than colored pigments. The bird's throat feathers contain minutely thin, film-like layers of platelets, set like tiles in a mosaic against a darker background. Light waves reflect and refract off the mosaic, creating color in the manner of sun glinting off a film of oil on water. Listen to this male Anna's hummingbird putting his glitter to work. There he goes, diving in display toward the female. He plunges downward almost vertically, achieving tremendous speed. Then he levels off and heads straight into the sun, which makes his gorget glow with iridescent brilliance, like a tiny knight in shining armor. You can see a photo of a hummingbird's gorget at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It is the time of the year to get your garden into the ground and prepare the soil and your plants. Gardening with Embark is a new regular segment we are doing in collaboration with the Embark Sustainability Society, which is an organization based here at SFU that focuses on issues like food security and sustainability. And one of the things they do is run, operate a couple of community gardens and a learning garden here on the campus. And Pablo Vimas is their gardening coordinator. And we're going to be talking to him each week about how to keep your garden growing and keep it healthy and get the most out of it. And this is my conversation with Pablo for this week.
Welcome, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark is here to talk about gardening.
Thank you.
So we're early in the planting season. What's something that people need to be thinking about right now?
Right now we are in week 15, and we are thinking on start our plants, buying our plants, visiting garden centers, nursery, supermarkets, chains. They are having all these garden centers outdoor, and we are just eager to get some seedlings or plant starters to bring to our garden. So that is at the moment thinking what I'm going to grow and how am I going to plant those into my garden.
Right. So people, maybe they've started their plants indoors or they're thinking of heading to the nursery and picking up some plants. So is now the time to be putting them in the soil outside?
Yes. Yes, that is the time to start putting the plants outdoors. So if you started your seeds indoors, you have to take at least 1 week to make the plants to move the plants from indoors to outdoors, because the plants indoors, they are very fragile. They don't have a strong stem. They are not exposed to wind, so you need to slowly adjust those plants to the outside environment where we have wind, we have rain, change of temperature very drastically. So that takes a while. So I will give that a week slowly to move the plants out.
How do you do that transition?
So that transition, you can be very, there are two styles. You can be very careful moving 1 hour at a time. So in the morning, you move. Bring the plants outside for 1 hour, bringing it inside for the rest of the day. The next day, you bring for 2 hours and bring it back again, and so on until at the end of the week, the plant stays overnight outdoors. Or the lazy method, which is wait like a forecast, overcast day, like a 2 day, for instance. It's cloudy, it's not too much sun, and it's quite okay, the temperature over 10 degrees Celsius. So we just bring the plants outdoors for a full day, and perhaps at night we bring indoors. In 3 days, that will be the way to do it. So in a lazy way, we should remember that, as I mentioned, we like to have an overcast day because plants growing indoors, they don't have this resistance to the sunlight, so they also can get some burn. Yeah.
So you got to be very gentle with your little seedlings and treat them nice.
Yes, we have to be very gentle with them. Yeah. So after a week, we are very confident that those plants are used to be outdoors, to change or temperature drastically. Yeah, they will do very well in the garden.
Great. And what are the considerations we need to think about when we're gonna go put them in the garden or in our planters?
Yeah, so once we get our seedlings ready to be moved outdoors, is the first thing is to remove the plants from the plastic pots they came. We can use a fork that we use for eating. Just pinch the fork into the soil, and then you're easy to remove. Because sometimes we try to wrap our fingers around the plant, flip it over, shake, 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 and suddenly everything is collapsing. The soil is crumbling. Then we have naked root. So the best thing is just with a fork, pinch into the soil, lift it, and it's straight into the garden. Now, once we are
Now,
making,
when you're doing that with the fork, how far do you want to go down? Because obviously you need to get under the roots, right?
yeah, it could be under the roots, can be vertically or in diagonally. Well, the roots won't get, they will get a bit damaged, but it's no major thing. The fact is that what we want to preserve is the soil around the roots. We don't want that soil crumble, and then we get a mass of roots, naked roots. So we want to prevent that. So before removing the plant from the pot, we need to make a small pocket in the soil. And usually the pocket should be wider than the root ball of the plant and not too deep. For instance, lettuces, pak choi, Chinese cabbage, we need to plant at the same level. So the neck of the plant should be just popping up above the ground. We shouldn't put the plants too deep. On the contrary, all the brassicas, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, we make a deep hole. We can put the plants very deep because adventitious roots grow from the stem of these plants. So the deeper that we put a kale into the soil, more root system will grow, and the plant will be very strong for the summer. So no, yeah, more roots, more chance to take more water. And we should remember that these plants grow very tall, so they won't topple. They won't tip over. Like with the minimum wind, they will just tip over, and then we are having those plants lying flat.
Right.
So
great. When you're working in the Embark's gardens here at the SFU campus, and Embark runs two gardens, right?
Correct. Yeah, we have two gardens.
Plus two gardens plus the learning garden that's actually here in the Student Union building, right?
So in Burnaby campus, we have two gardens, one which is located south side of Task 1, and the other is on the third level of the Student Union building.
So when you're planting into those gardens, you know, ones, well, are they both box gardens?
Yes, we grow in containers that are 4 feet by 4 feet wide. Yeah, so it's quite square. And I think we have 26 inches tall. So they are very, very tall boxes.
Right. Well, good. What are you thinking about when you're putting them into the gardens like that, into the boxes? And what's different between someone planting, you know, in their backyard where they're actually planting at ground level and maybe bigger? You know,
So we have two different environments. As I mentioned, we grow in garden beds, which are boxes above ground. And these boxes are filled with man-made soil, with engineered soil. So this soil is rich in compost and have sand on it. While the people who is growing in community gardens, they will be growing in-ground plots, which have a more local soil. So the soil itself is completely different. The ones in the ground, they will have sand, silt, clay, while the ones that we use in our gardens, they are just engineered soil, rich in compost. So the soil is completely different. Our soil tends to get drier very quick. So we tend to water before doing any transplant. And because they are in boxes, the soil warms up very quick during the spring. And as well, it cools down very quick during the winter. But the in-ground plots, they take a little while to warm up. Because now with the rains that we had in the last month, they will be perhaps saturated, water saturated, and we need to wait that these water drains and the soil slowly start warming up. So it will take a bit of a while for in-ground plots to warm up and be welcoming to the plants. So I'm thinking on that. So we water the soil before planting. And then we start thinking, how are we going to plant? We have three different styles of planting. One is single rows. It means like in the farm, you just put one plant in another in a file. Or we can do a spot planting, which is like the square foot gardening approach, which is an intensive approach. So in a square foot, 12 inches by 12 inches, we can grow 16 carrots, 16 radishes. We can grow 16 scallions or 4 lettuces, 9 pak choys, 9 spinaches, and just 1 cabbage, 1 broccoli. So that is, and the other planting approach is, I call this wild approach. It means that I just planting here and there, making sure that there's enough space for the plants, but it's a mix of everything. Will be tall plants, small plants, will be brassicas, will be lettuces, will be root plants, all mixed together. Yeah, something try to replicate what nature does. Nature throws the seeds into the air, and those seeds are carried away by the birds, animals, they land on the ground, and they just sprout and start germinating and growing. Also, during this planting, we also consider the companion planting, what other plants like to grow next to other plants, so which plants like to grow it together. So there is a long list of plants that like to grow together. Plants that don't like to grow together, for instance, are peas and onions. And It's something very funny that the way we mix our foods when we eat is the way that we grow plants in the garden too. For instance, peas and carrots, we have in pickles, and they do very well in the garden together. But peas and onions in pickles, I haven't seen it, so they don't work together. And the other, we have tomatoes and basil, tomatoes and peppers, tomatoes and cilantro. So the way we eat our food is a kind of a guidance how plants like to grow in the garden too.
Is there are there advantages to the different styles? You know, the row, the spot, the wild, or is it just a matter of preference?
There are advantages. For instance, the spot, in planting in a spot is a very intensive approach. So you harvest, you put your plants from the very beginning at the right distance. So the plant has the space to grow and develop. And once you harvest in the same spot, you continue planting, you put another plant. So it's constantly harvest, plant, harvest, plant, harvest, plant, which is great. We optimize the space that we have. However, we need to have our plants ready to go. I mean, we need to have seedlings ready to go or seeds ready to go. So we cannot leave that empty spot till we get plants because it's intensive. So the single row we can have is easier to, is easier, is advised even in the seed packets how to plant. But the disadvantage is that we can very much plant too many. For instance, how many lettuces we eat a week? In the square foot gardening, we said 4 lettuces, that will be okay. So if we eat 1 lettuce per week, we have at least 1 month of lettuces. But if you plant in rows and you have 10 lettuces all coming at the same time, all needed to be eating at the same time.
That's a lot of salad.
Lots of salad, yeah. So with the row system, it's like, oh, yeah, I just planted and grow, but we kind of forget who is going to eat. And then we have this issue that, oh, there is too much, now we cannot eat. So that is the comparison advantage and disadvantage. With a wild system, for instance, would be that all plants are coming at maturing at different time. So, and in between those plants as well, we have wheat. So when the plants are young, if you are harvesting, for instance, leaf lettuce, sure, 1 or 2 wheat will be harvesting into that.
Yeah.
And then if the wheat are in between, it's rather difficult to differentiate what is the plant, what is the wheat. And sometimes we ended up removing the plant and keeping the wheat. Yeah.
These are some great tips for people getting ready to transplant their plants into the garden and get the outdoor garden going. Thanks so much for this today.
Oh, thank you. It was nice chatting to you today.
And you'll be back.
And Pablo will be back next week with more tips on making your garden green as we move into spring and then into summer. Pablo Vimes is with Embark Sustainability Society as their gardening manager. This is Gordon Gardena with a new track called Not of Them. که توی کارم، زیرا که توی بارم، جان من و جان تو گویی که یکی بوده، سوگند به این یک جان غیر تو بیزارم.
رفتم بر درویشی گفتم که خدا یارم گویی به دعای او شد چون تو شهی
just about out of time for the show today. You're listening to Gordon Gardina. He's a Vancouver musician, specializes in the guitar and the oud, who has quite an extensive discography, almost 11 albums out. This is from a new album called Gordon Gardina's The Marrow, just dropped here in Vancouver, and I'm sure if you look it up you can find more information online. Thank you, Peter, for today.
Okay.
Good. Peter will be back next week, and so will I. Stay tuned now for Democracy Now! Coming up in just a moment.